You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
It's Thursday, so it's time for Wayne on Wednesday with Wayne McCurry, Portfolio Manager at FNB Wealth and Investment in Johannesburg. Wayne, as we go into the Easter break and then we go into another couple of public holidays as well in a couple of weeks' time, people sort of winding down and maybe taking stock of what's happened over the last three and a bit months. It's been quite satisfactory, hasn't it, this year?
Yes, it has been. So this year so far is made up of, I think, probably three components, but as per normal, they're all related. Well, for the whole of January, we had a continuation of the bull market that started the beginning of October.
Yeah.
And that bull market was driven by inflation's going to fall, interest rates are going to fall, therefore the market goes up, essentially.
Right.
Then at the end of January, we had those two main reports coming out of the USA. One was the jobs report that just shot the lights out on the upside. And everyone was extremely worried about that because, you know, where's the labor market, given what the economy is doing? Why is the labor market so strong? So therefore, inflation will stay higher for longer. Therefore, interest rates will stay higher for longer. And we had the actual interest rate print out of America as well. And that really pushed the market down the whole of February till the middle of March. And in the middle of March, you know, you had a few more inflation numbers coming out. You had a few more labor market numbers coming out. None of them were decisive either way, either positive or negative. They were very much in line with anticipated results. So then 2-3 weeks ago, the market decided, hey, hang on a second. That same thesis we had in place from October to January, maybe that's back on the table. And the market started to rally from there, and they essentially have clawed back about half of the losses they made during February in the first 2 weeks of March. And that's quite consistent. It's quite consistent across world markets. Even our local market, a lot of the upside is from gold shares. I mean, gold shares are up 50-odd%.
Yeah.
You know, in a couple of weeks, quite astonishing, actually. And essentially, the world markets are back at the highs we saw the end of January, given this little rally that we're seeing now. But our market's not back at previous highs yet, and mainly because financial shares, especially banks, haven't recovered all of the losses that they made from the end of January to beginning of March, halfway through March. They have bounced. The mining shares and industrials are essentially back at record highs, whereas the financials aren't.
The gold shares are fascinating, aren't they? I mean, I'm sure that you're not a real gold investor and never have been because of the volatility and the emotion that is associated with them. And, they, you know, it's one day you're cock-a-hoop, the next day you're down in the dumps. They have a terrific time. I can remember about 2 months ago when I was talking about gold threatening to break its big number from 1,800 to 17 to 1,700. And now look at us, consolidating above 2,000. Do you ever get tempted?
2,000, yeah. No, not at all. And I've obviously faced a lot of questions about gold just recently.
Yes.
And it's first of all, it is just a punting story. You know, you get it right, you do exceptionally well. You get it wrong, I'm just typing out the gold price. Yeah.
It's 2011 at the moment.
If you manage to get it right, you make an absolute fortune and you look so clever. But it's extremely difficult to actually get it right because you're guessing. So all you can do with gold, I think, is sort of almost set trading limits. You know, and base it on the rand price of gold or, you know, whatever you want to. But, you know, when you look at gold and even when you look at it on some sort of deflated basis, when the gold gets, I suppose, below 1,000, then you buy it. When it goes above 2,000, you sell it.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's only peaked above 2,000 very infrequently in the last while. I think it's twice in the last 5 years that it's actually, and it doesn't stay there for long at all. And, You know, it's a very, very difficult, very volatile thing to actually get hold of and to actually work on. So, yeah, I'm just having a look now. It's peaked three times in the last 10 years.
But you're not
massive run.
You talked about trading, but you're not a trader. You're a long-term investor. And
That's why I run my gold shares.
I just wonder what the history of it is. I mean,
that's why I don't buy gold shares.
But if you can stomach the short-term fluctuations, then in the long term, has it been a good investment or a bad investment? Let's say over 5 years, bad investment, right?
It's been an extremely bad investments over the years. Now, I mean, David Shapiro,
he won't touch it.
He doesn't touch it, but he grew up in markets during the proper bull years. And I suppose you can say the bull years were the 80s, essentially.
Yeah.
Well, the 70s and sorry, the 70s were the true bull years and a little bit of the 80s. So he had great nostalgia for gold because, in the early 80s, I think 40% of the listed shares were gold shares. And I think also it was approaching 50% of the JSE's market capitalization at that stage were gold was gold shares. I mean, they were huge in our market for a number of reasons. Gold, we still had gold in the ground. You know, there's very little gold left in the ground in South Africa. All the cheap stuff's been all the good and cheap stuff you can argue has been mined out. But he was so upset when the JSE dropped
the gold index.
Well,
you see, Wayne,
he was so upset.
Yeah, but why would he be upset? Because he's never been a gold investor. When I arrived in South Africa in 1988, there was the South African Futures Exchange, and it had the industrial index, and it had the all-share index, etc. It also had the gold index, and it wasn't the gold 10 index, which it eventually became, and then it disappeared. It was the gold 30 index. And you used to hear of names like Western Area and Ergo and all sorts of different companies have now been absorbed by the real giants, and now it's dead. There's no gold index anymore, Wayne.
No, there is no gold index. But there is no gold index. But if you take the gold index, you know, you had two magnificent runs. You had the run 70s, as I was saying, to the early 80s.
Yes.
Then it went down enormously from the early 80s through to 2003. Then you had a mother of all runs, and now in the last while you've had a little run in the gold.
Yeah.
So it has over time, unfortunately, been quite a poor investment. And as I said, unfortunately, because the JSE has taken away that index, you can't really plot it that well. You can't really plot it over time. So I'm just trying to use using Anglo Gold as a proxy for the gold index.
Okay.
Anglo Gold outperformed the market by 600% in the 70s. And from literally 1983 onwards, it has been a consistent underperformer. It's underperformed the index by probably 90%, 90, if not more. And every now and again, every 5 years, you get this little bounce in the gold price, and we're getting one of those now. So gold has, in fact, been an extremely poor investment over the years. And it's so volatile, and I'm not sure what drives it. So I've never bought a gold share.
And you never will.
And I never will. And I can still remember when I started in investments, my mentor, my boss, who I still see on a very, very regular basis.
At your lunchtime meetings, you know, those.
No, he's well retired now.
Oh, okay.
And he's well retired now. He actually runs Swartkop's racetrack.
What's Swartkop? He's a motorman as well, like you.
Oh, yeah, no, that's what I'm saying. He's a motorman. And I always like being friends with him because if anyone says to me, Wayne, are you crazy to have so many guys, so many cars?
Mm.
And my answer to them is, in comparison to Peter, I am a babe in the woods And it doesn't make me feel that unusual having so many cars, because I can just compare it to Peter, the number of cars that Peter has got. But anyway, the point was, he was the biggest gold bull around. And he still is a gold bull to this day. But it's been a consistent underinvestment, because he can remember gold in the 70s, where gold was the only game in town. You know, if you forget these things, in the 70s, the gold shares were the tech shares of the day.
Yes.
If you didn't have gold in your portfolio, you were dead as a portfolio manager. But I only caught, let's say, I only caught the bear market of gold. I certainly wouldn't be tempted into gold now.
You see, 1970, I think, was the year when South Africa produced 1,100 tons of gold in 1 year. And that was the peak. And if you look back, you could say, OK, there was a few years afterwards where the gold shares went on a run. But you knew then that South Africa started falling down the world rankings of gold production. And therefore, you should have known that in the long term, you don't invest in these shares. 1,100 tons, I don't know where we are now, sixth or seventh in the world rankings of gold production.
I don't think we're producing. I mean, I don't even know, because the gold mines, you'll actually have to go, because these gold mines are all international now.
Yes.
Just about. So you'll have to go and actually go to each mine to count up the gold output. But damn it, I would think it's probably between 100 and 200 tons, if they.
Yeah. Exactly.
And certainly in the 90s, we were still doing 500 tons, 600 tons in the 90s. And it's just been a slow decline. As you run out of gold physical, you run out of gold as a percentage of the ore that you extract from the mine. In other words, you're extracting poorer quality ore, and you've got to go so much deeper to get it out of the ground.
Yeah, I mean, look at South Deep, for example.
I mean, these things go 3-4 kilometers, man. I mean, it's astonishing. It's actually a technological marvel that it's not, they're not profitable. And that's why all the gold mines have gone overseas. And I can remember when Anglo-American unbundled Anglo Gold, you know, I thought, how can it be that their company was based on gold?
Gold and diamonds, yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And they sold it out, and it turned out to be the right decision. So every 5 years, they say, we shouldn't have sold Anglo Gold. Look how it's not sold it, unbundled it. Look how it's running now. So Anglo Gold is a proxy for the gold index. The share price has effectively done nothing since 1987. I know it has gone up. It's gone up from, you know, from 300 to 400 since 87. But, I mean, that's less than probably 2% a year.
Do you remember I think it was the Chancellor of the Exchequer at the time of the United Kingdom, Gordon Brown. He went on to be Prime Minister, but I think it was, and he sold the UK's gold reserves at something ridiculous, like $250 per ounce.
Yeah.
It was just above it. I think it was $251.25. And that was the last thing. And then everyone said, right, the UK has sold its gold reserves because it needed to bolster the exchequer, the fiscal position in the UK. And then the gold price never looked back from there, 250 upwards. I don't want to go on too much about it, but if you had to invest in it, would it be an ETF, would it be a share, or would it be physical gold?
Look, if you want to go for gold, you might as well take the gearing that the shares give you.
Yeah.
So, you know, I would never do it, but if I was forced into it, I'd rather buy the shares. So if you were so positive, about gold, if gold goes back to, I don't know, pick a number, 800 an ounce.
Yes.
Then you might be tempted to buy gold. You know, 1,000 or 900 or 800 an ounce, might be tempted. Now, I remember those days while it was late 90s, gold price was sitting at 300 and all the gold mines were so worried it was going to 100 and then they would be out of business. So they sold years of production forward. So in other words, they did forward sales of production at 300 just to try and save their businesses in case it fell to 100. You know, next stop was 2000. So those guys had to close out those contracts they went into at an enormous cost. And that was the same time that the central banks were selling as well. And that was one of the reasons why it was 300 is the central banks were selling.
Okay, let's move on now from the yellow metal to the white metal. Yeah, there's been a bit of corporate action today because that whole business of Royal Bafokeng and Northam, etc. And it seems to me, just having a look at the announcements here, where is it? It's on the SENS. Termination of proposed offer by Northam Platinum Holdings Limited, and that's from Royal Bafokeng. And I'm looking at the prices now. Northam loves that. The investors love it because Northam is up 6.75%. I know you've been nibbling at Platinum and you've been very open about it. You've been nibbling at Platinum shares. Is Northam one of yours?
Yes.
Well done.
We have been, we bought a selection, not just Northam, but we bought a selection of shares.
Yeah.
And look, the reason why it's running today is more technical. Well, it's not technical. I mean, it's more, there were short sellers in the market for whatever reasons, and they had to close their position. So there were a little bit of forced buyers there today. What we're experiencing now is a very normal commodity cycle. I mean, the price of palladium has fallen from 3,000 to 1,500. Platinum has stayed below 500 for 7 years now. Below 1,000.
Yes.
I do apologize. I'm looking at the wrong axis here. Below 1,000.
Just above 1,000 at the moment. It has been this week, yeah.
Yeah. But it's been there since 2016, and it peaked at 2,200. You know, so we're going through a very, very normal platinum or commodity, but in this case, specifically platinum cycle. Now, Northam has come up and said we walking away from this deal because of adverse market conditions. Okay.
Rubbish.
Now, that might be written into their contract, but to say the price of rhodium and the 4E price of whatever has fallen below a certain level for 6 or 10 days, in the bigger scheme of things, is that even relevant? Surely the time to be buying these shares now is when everything is collapsing around your ears. Because that's the cycle.
Of course it is. You be contracyclical. I think. When everyone else is selling, you come in and mop it up. Exactly.
You should be buying. Yes.
And that's what you're doing
now. So now RB Platts, it looks as though Impala is going to get it.
Yeah.
And it's actually a better fit for Impala than Northam.
So would you buy Impala? That's the thing. I mean, it's part of your basket of PGMs, right?
Not at the moment, but we would consider buying Impala. Impala's got the Impala lease area. These are old assets. Anglo Platts owns the best platinum mine in the world by literally a country mile.
Out in Rustenburg.
And it's a fantastic asset. They've got two ones. They've got two big ones, but the one is just an absolute fantastic asset. Impala's got to find more reserves. That's why they're making the bid for RB Platts.
Which is well.
Northam's got enough reserves, but Impala with that big lease area, those are old assets, those now. The ore body's old now.
Royal Bafokeng Platinum has always had a good reputation with commentators that I speak to. They've always said we really like Royal Bafokeng. Okay, it's not the biggest, but it's got everything. It's got the community, the ESG, all that sort of thing. But mostly, it's got some good assets, even though they're not the biggest. Yes. And that's why I think it's so sought after.
Correct, and that's why Impala and Northam were going for it.
Okay. Right, we're going into Easter now, Wayne, which is traditionally, it's probably the most important Christian festival of the year, even more than Christmas itself. But also, to me, it signals food. What are you doing food-wise this weekend?
Nothing actually terribly exciting. Oh. To be honest, we've got very little planned for this weekend. We probably going to go out this evening to a place called the Riverside Cafe that I've spoken about before.
Yes.
They have got Prego rolls to die for.
There we go.
They bake their own Portuguese rolls. You get a nice piece of steak with most delicious Prego sauce on it and little shoestring chippies, nice and crispy.
Yep.
You can sit inside or outside, so hopefully it's not too cool tonight. We might sit outside because then we can take the dog with us because they like you. They're quite happy if you bring your dog. And the dog absolutely loves going out. So it's a very special treat, and you take the dog along to the Riverside Cafe because he normally meets other dogs and other people, and people come up and say hello to him, and he absolutely loves the occasion.
It's like, so not only you should call your dog Shapiro,
the dog also likes it.
You should call your dog Shapiro. He sounds like a sociable fella.
He is actually just like Shapiro.
He's a canine Shapiro.
You know, whenever you go, you can go anywhere in the greater Johannesburg region with Shapiro, and three things are absolutely guaranteed.
Number one.
One is you will have a fun time.
Number two.
Shapiro's a fun character.
He really is.
Number two, you will know approximately 80% of the people in that restaurant.
Yeah, especially the waitresses.
And number three, he will know 100% of the girls in that restaurant.
Thank you very much.
Or they will know him.
Exactly. So he's a character.
He's only got a hit rate of, he only got a hit rate of about 40% with men. So he only knows about 40% of the men, but he knows 100% of the girls. Or they know him.
He's a charmer, without a doubt.
He's an absolute charmer. Shapiro and I once were catching an aeroplane to go and give a presentation down in Durban together. And we're standing in the queue now. Yeah. We're at the boarding gate. We're standing in the queue waiting to get on the plane, on the aeroplane. And there were, I don't know, six really beautiful young girls, you know, in early 20s, early 20s, just behind us in the queue. Mm-hmm. And by the time we got to the boarding gate, Shapiro knew all their names, what they're up to, why they're going to Durban. What he knew that within 3 minutes, man, we were waiting on the boarding gate. And it was actually a female percussion a cappella group called Chicks with Sticks. So they played rhythm songs and they played drums and that, and they were going to Durban for the concert. But Shapiro, they all knew him. He knew all their names before we even got on the aeroplane.
No, he can't help himself. This is the thing. He can't help himself.
He's totally innocent. I don't want people to think he's a womanizer.
Not by any means whatsoever.
He's an absolute charmer, though.
Yeah, he charms.
You know, I think girls look at him, and he's a charming man. Girls look at him and they say, you know, it's like that warm, fuzzy feeling that he's a grandfather type of figure.
Yeah, or maybe they feel sorry for him. I don't know.
No, they definitively don't. No one ever feels sorry for Shapiro.
Certainly not me. No, he's great.
No one ever feels sorry. No, yeah. Anyway, yes. So, just
so the food is nothing. You went to get your Prager rolls last night, and they were delicious, etc. But nothing really well planned for the weekend. I always in the Northern Hemisphere, you associate the Easter festival, if you want to call it that, with Easter eggs. Obviously, the Easter egg hunt, and also lamb. And I remember speaking to you last Wednesday, and telling you that I was cycling along and I saw these all beautiful white, so beautiful lambs that have just been born, and they're gambolling around in the fields, and they stood out because their mothers and fathers are sort of greyish, but the lambs were pure white. I was feeling guilty because I wanted to have lamb. I succumbed. I went to the butcher, very fine butcher. I went there and there was a lot of people in there, and I said, "Have you got new season lamb?" He said, "Yes, of course." So they've been slaughtering the lambs. The silence of the lambs was the theme. And I said, "What have you got?" He said, "These things are incredible. I've only got four left. Baby lamb shanks." So I bought these baby lamb shanks, and I'm going to put in a heavy bottomed pot with onions, carrots, turnips, parsnips, a little bit of stock, half a tin of tomatoes, rosemary, thyme and garlic, and I'm going to cook those things. They're only small ones, so it'll only be about an hour and a half. Yeah. But when those things come out and I put them on the plate with some crispy delicious roast potatoes, that's my Sunday tribute to this festival.
Fantastic.
Doesn't
it? The best lamb I ever had was in Colesberg. And I encourage all people who are listening in here, next time you're driving down or going between Joburg and Cape Town, stop off in Colesberg and go to one of the little, essentially, bed and breakfasts. And there's about three or four of them in Colesberg.
Yes.
And then there's this one restaurant. There's about three restaurants in the town.
Yes.
But there's this one restaurant in the main street just down from the big church.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an old house that's been converted into a restaurant stroke pub. Life for me, I cannot remember its name. There's another one there called the Mill House, the Millstone. Mm. It's the old flour mill where they used to grind the flowers with the big stones. And it's still got the stone there. And it's also got the area where the horses used to walk around and around grinding it. Yes. But it's not that one. It's the other one. Okay. I went in there and I ordered roast lamb. Oh. It was truly delicious. Truly, truly delicious.
You see, the difference between a Dutch lamb and a South African lamb from the Karoo is that the lamb from the Karoo, they munch on herbs and grasses that you don't get.
Yes,
here.
You don't get in the Nederland.
No, yeah. Exactly.
Oh, yeah, you know, and then, look, maybe the guy bought his lamb at Pick n Pay in Colesburg, I don't know, but wherever he sourced it, it was truly, truly delicious.
And Colesburg is the one, if you're going down to Cape Town directly from Johannesburg in a motor car,
right at
stop at Beaufort right West, right? But on the way to Plettenberg Bay, you stop at Colesburg, isn't that right or not?
You would turn off to Plettenberg Bay at Colesburg.
Exactly.
And Colesburg, I think, is exactly halfway. Beaufort West is a little bit more than halfway. But when I went to go and pick up a car in Cape Town, I actually stayed overnight in Beaufort West, in the, I think it's the Oasis Hotel, but it's the only hotel in Beaufort West.
And it's not great.
And it was fine. But then we went to a place called the Three Sheep or the Four Sheep on the northern side of town, mm-hmm. overlooking their reservoir dam thing on the northern side of town, on this double story just above a garage. And they also had fantastic. I had a Cape Malay lamb curry there, and that was also fantastic. It was actually a beautiful day. It was stinking hot. It was middle of summer, mm-hmm. and sort of went to the restaurant at about 4:30. It was still boiling hot, and then this real thunderstorm came through. The whole place cooled down. You saw the rainbows after the storm over on the second story overlooking this Flay Dam, just on the northern side, as I said, of Beaufort West. At that big circle, as you drive in from the north in Beaufort West, there's that one huge circle there. And it was also fantastic. I also almost made a huge mistake there. I mean, obviously, it's all Afrikaans. And yes. I mean, I'm okay at Afrikaans. And they've got the menu written up on the wall in chalk, you know, on a chalk. They got the menu written up on the wall.
Yeah.
And I saw their lamb chop, you know, in Afrikaans, lamb chop. So I thought, well, lamb chops would be nice. And I almost ordered it until I looked a little bit closer. It was lamb kop, lamb head.
Oh.
So I don't know what would have happened if a lamb's head had pitched up on my plate with the eyeball staring at me, because I generally don't like my food with eyeballs in it looking at me.
No, or tails or anything like that. Yikes.
Yeah.
Okay, well, good. I'm glad you rectified that situation before it became unpleasant. Wayne, have a wonderful Easter weekend. We'll speak again next Wednesday.
Yes,
Wayne,
same to you.
That's Wayne McCurry from F&B Wealth and Investment. And that was Wayne on Wednesday on Thursday. The views and opinions expressed in these podcasts are those of Lindsay Williams and various contributors and do not reflect the policy, position, or opinion of any other agency, organization, employer, or company associated with strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Assumptions made on the analyses are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the speaker or the author. And since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to change, revision, and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity.